Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
A safe place where we have the freedom to think about life without judgment. We take a look at society, we examine it, and we allow for the possibility of something new, something different. And now, here's your host, Alan Ritter.
Well, welcome everyone, and thank you for listening live to An Emerging Forest this February 18th, Sunday, 2018, sort of the middle of February. Very interesting times here in the Philadelphia, United States region, as the long-suffering Eagles fans have finally gotten a Super Bowl. So there's it's very interesting because there is a psychological shift. All of the persons who would have gone into a bar for the last 50 years, and then we're the guys who never win and we can't win. Well, their psychology has now been shifted. They don't have that in their lives anymore. And it's also 4 days after Valentine's Day. And last week, Larry Cagno and I talked about the fragment of the whole society that's actually represented. And it's actually a really tiny fragment of the whole seeker's world, the seeker after truth's world, is this commercialized love interest, where love is something which is basically commercialized and found in a box of chocolates, or found in a bottle of alcohol of your choice. So, what we would like to talk about tonight was actually a topic proposed by my co-host, because he's done some interesting work lately. And he also, I was at the produce market for my produce club, produceclub.us, if you're in the southeastern Pennsylvania and southern New Jersey area. And David, I was standing in back of a van in front of a semi-load door and waiting for produce to come out. And David sent me a promo video for a show, my mini-series that will begin, funny enough, at 9 p.m. on Sunday nights, beginning on March 11th, which is Pope, the most powerful man in the world, most powerful man in history. And the funny thing about that is the filming of that miniseries took place in Philadelphia, and that's actually where I met David. I was sort of asking people if they could give me a ride home, and he gave me a ride home, And that's where he learned that I was the host on this radio show. So the cool thing about the video, the promo, is that I'm actually in the final scene, way in the foreground. David sent me the video and said, you're kind of in a prominent place in this video. So that was really cool. I didn't expect to be in a prominent place in the video of that scene, but there are some scenes that if they're used, I'm kind of in a prominent place. And there are also some scenes that that David is in a very prominent place. And that's you would agree with that, right, David?
That you're in a prominent place in the video?
No, that if they use, if they use the footage that they shot of the various scenes, you're certainly going to be a pretty prominent face in those scenes, right?
Well, yeah, there are some places where I was in a good position to be seen. So you'll see what happens,
Yeah,
but it should be an interesting series. There were some scenes that I was in. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. You never get into these things, or I'm so early in doing anything like this that you never know what to expect, and you never know what the outcome's going to be. I don't think even people who have been, of course, the prominent quote-unquote featured people kind of have a better feel, and they kind of know that they're going to get some face time.
Mm-hmm.
But you never know as a background actor. I'm
right.
Certain that Valerie, my mentor, knows that she's been in. She worked really hard on several episodes of iRobot, and her stuff was never used. So she was in a lot of scenes and had really prominent. If they used that footage, she would have been right there, and then come
mm-hmm.
time to see the show, and you're like, well, wait a minute, they didn't use that scene at all. It's like she was, I can't remember who she was dancing with, but she was dancing with a pretty big name in one scene, and she saw the movie or the production afterwards, and they just didn't even use that scene. And she was like, oh, my gosh, we spent 2.5 hours doing that scene, and they didn't even use it. So it's very interesting. So
yeah, well, you never know where you end up in the shot.
Or you never know. So
yeah,
why don't you go ahead? I can't hear you.
One thing that you mentioned at the top, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. That's good.
All right. One thing that you mentioned at the top was a couple things. The first, we were talking about the idea is the death, the taboo of death. I guess it's the death of the thought that Philadelphia can't win the Super Bowl. So that whole belief is dead, right? But what's fascinating to me, sports fan for a long time, I'm really not anymore, but the psychology of how a sports team's victory can affect the psychology and mindset of an entire city is somewhat, it's ridiculous, really. And I've been to the person that, that lived and died on how their team did, and thankfully, I'm not like that anymore. But it's a sports team. It's you can't even call it a game. It's a business. It's entertainment. It's like going to. Sure, you don't know the outcome, but it's like going to any kind of entertainment event. And to tie your mentality and yourself and a city, an entire city, to be uplifted or downtrodden because their team. Take it now, not just a team, but their team, lost in the biggest game of the year. you know, in this case they won, but if they lost, they'd say, oh, we're losers again. It's somewhat, what's the word? It's wrong that sports has that much power in society and how it can affect the psyche of an entire city. You know, it's like, yeah, when we're kids, sure, then I can understand it. But when you're an adult, because there's other things in life to define who you are, and certainly what a city is. Oh, a city can have a horrible crime rate, a horrible whatever, but hey, if we want it, forget all that, we're great. I'm not saying that's Philadelphia. I'm saying it's in any kind of city, but I'm saying there's other things that define what makes a city something to be proud of besides, you know, hoisting the Lombardi trophy, as nice as it is. So I'm, you know, that's one thing. And then Valentine's Day is just, what can you say about it? It's a hallmark. It's a hallmark holiday. It's created completely for consumerism, you know, hearts, chocolates, all of that. And to make someone feel good on one day, well, you should make them, the person, if you love them, to feel good every day. It's not, you know, it's this whole idea that there has to be a celebration around this just plastic and superficial view of relationships, and which are complicated. And to just say, oh, well, hey, I got you a box of chocolates. Happy Valentine's Day, honey. All the other things I did this year doesn't matter now because, you know, I'm celebrating Valentine's Day with you. It's ironic. The biggest massacre of all time was on St. Valentine's Day in Chicago. I think that was Al Capone, the big mafia hit. They might be mafia. I know there was organized crime. I don't think that's, you know, that's coincidence. So there's my two cents on your opening, you know, and the idea that that to be defined, to have love be defined by one day out of the year when Hallmark makes a bunch of money, or American Greetings, or whatever chocolate company, and define yourself because your team won the big one.
Dave, we have a caller, so I'm just going to bring the caller on, if that's okay.
Sure.
Hi, caller. What's your name? Hello, caller. You're on the air. Do you want to be on the air? Guess not. Put him back on hold. So go ahead.
So the caller or me?
No, Dave. You go ahead. I put them back on hold. I brought
them
out.
I had finished that thought.
Okay. So the main topic of the show is that you wanted to talk about is a subject that I really like, but I don't want to talk about my perspective. I want you to talk about your perspective.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's a perspective per se. I think it's just, you know, there's a great, our society has a great, fear is the right word, but death is not something people like to talk about. But it certainly is a great equalizer because every single person, including you and I, we're all going to hit it. We're all going to die. I mean, it's going to happen. You can't prevent it. You can prevent everything else, maybe, but you can't prevent death. And then the question is, what is death anyhow? It's a transformation. And to look at the word death and what it means, I mean, there's death of the human body. But we look at death in a way of certain aspects of ourselves that die during our lifetime, things that we define ourselves by. I think that's a death. And we talk about the concept of death and resurrection. Well, I think we experience death and resurrection throughout our life. I think that's you know, you could wrap it around religion and whatever, you know, this, you know, death and rebirth. But death and rebirth happens in nature every 4 months. And it happens in different times of your life. I think probably in ancient cultures, when a person transitioned from childhood to adulthood or to teenhood, that's a, you know, that's a celebration of rebirth, because who they were as a child no longer exists. Now you are, you have become something else. And there was those rites of passages that those cultures would celebrate. So death happens all the time, and not just the death of the human life. And even then, that is a, you know, it's a transformation, a transition. We don't really know what happens. I mean, there are different viewpoints. There's resurrection. There's, you know, there's the idea of reincarnation. There's the idea that you just go on the ground and you're done. There's the idea of golden palace is heaven. There's the idea of you know, different levels of existence. You know, so the idea that we can't, as a culture, look at death and talk about it really hurts us, because to fear death is to fear life. I know that sounds like a cliche, but we have to, but we look at things in such a manner that we overlook the inevitability, not the inevitability, but as much as just, you know, looking at death as something that we all will deal with, we all will face, and we have faced with loved ones that have died, with pets that have died, with relationships that have died, because I believe that's, you know, that's something that dies, parts of ourselves, things that we, you know, maybe where we went to school got torn down, that has now died, and that's now reborn as something else, whatever rose up from that. The same with the relationship. A relationship dies, and then something else comes up from that. Either that relationship becomes a friendship, or it just completely dies, or transitions into our next relationship, whatever that may be. So to look at death on a larger scale, a larger scheme than just the fact of, you know, of death of the human body.
Yes, I celebrated a very large, well, I celebrated, because I look at everything as a celebration. It was, at the time, it was a very sad, it was an unbelievably sad time for me at the time when my mother transitioned in January of 2013, and I took it very badly. But 18 months later, I made a transition from the pits of despair, knowing everything to be of no use to me, to all of a sudden in an instant understanding that wasn't the case, that everything was of use to me. And that in going from an understanding of that I had to, that there was no reason for me to continue to exist, to understanding that no, to accepting that because I continued to exist, that it wasn't the case that everything was complete depression, everything was complete ecstasy. So the transition in my thought was based, turned me into an all-inclusive, maybe in the instant, I can be tweaked to be unhappy, but I'm here for an experience, and I'm interested in transitioning and leaving behind awarenesses and levels of knowledge and levels of understanding that just don't suit me anymore. So at each one of those points of life, you transition, you don't control when you transition, and literally the person that I was in May of 2014 is a completely different person. I mean, I have, it's interesting, in physiology, if you have no long-standing waste pools in your body, as in you're not harboring waste that doesn't get, that you haven't excreted, so if you're eating things that will allow you to allow your body to actually excrete everything, every single piece of your body gets replaced every 14 months. So the concept of the human society that we live in is that so-and-so is, you know, 70 years old. Well, the issue is that if we don't eat a diet that, if we eat a diet which is taking in more waste than our body can excrete, yes, that person probably has waste product in their body from the time they were, whenever they started eating, whenever their metabolic pool from when they were a baby runs out, it usually runs out at about 45, but it can run out earlier if you're doing really bad things to your body, like drinking too much alcohol or living a very intense life. Not to say that that's wrong, but you'll run out of your egg sac. you'll run out of your dicotyledons, if you want to put it that way. You'll run out of your reserve. And that's when most people really start packing on extra waste. And that's why the waste is called waste, because that's where you pack it on. Mm-hmm. But if you're eating a diet that's more in line with your physiology, which I don't say that everyone has to, because everyone has to experience all those other states of being. That's what they're there for. So if you're eating something that's more in line with your body, literally, you're 14 months old. Your body is 14 months old. And in my thinking process, your mind, which I call your soul, isn't in your body, and it's ageless. So the concept of age, the concept of, oh, you get to 80 years old or 90 years old or 95 years old, and you're this feeble creature, is not an idea that I hold on to anymore. It's an idea that this society holds on to very, very, with both hands, both feet wrapped around it, because they're actually in love with the idea of, I would say, being in that state at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So this, what I'm explaining, this set of this understanding of physiology, et cetera, isn't something that I had an understanding of when I was 45 years old. It's only something that I've arrived at in the last 10 years of my life. And I'm not saying that it's right. I'm just saying, well, physiologically, you're 14 months or less old. Your body certainly does go through a maturation process. Your body certainly does have, possibly has a longevity aligned with it. But there's things that we're taught that might be so, and there's things that we're taught that, you know, we grow up with Santa Claus, we grow up with the Tooth Fairy, and maybe some of the things that we've been taught later in life are also social management tools that we can either continue or die, have those things die as something else replaces them. So there's literally your adventure and what parts of yourself, what attitudes, et cetera, what configurations of how you conduct yourself that you want to have die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very true. I mean, that's, you know, because we, for a lot of people, don't change. They're afraid of death in that regard, death of their of that particular aspect of themselves, I would say that happens with a lot of people. And there's an apprehension to understanding understanding human death as well. I have, I've taken care of a person who before they died, you know, for the last months of their life. So you see what's happening in those final stages, and that and what you do in that situation, how you handle that, and you can't give in to your own emotions, because that's not going to help the other person, you know. But at the same time, you understand more of how the process of decay, you know, is. And then we don't really know, you know, death is the great mystery. Death and sex, right? I mean, those are the great mysteries, one of creation and one of ending, or maybe it's a different type of creation, you know, transformation, transition. Maybe this is death, and once we die, we realize, oh, wow. Oh, that was the situation, because we really don't know. It's something that, you know, that is still a mystery that no, you know, sure, you may have examples of ghosts or spirits or whatever, but you don't really have a definite or outline of what happens after we stop breathing and the heart stops, and then of course the brain. You know, we don't know unless we until we experience it. We have individual recollections of things from other people that, you know, have died and come back, but you know, that's why the breath is so important. You think about, you know, every breath. I mean, the breath is, that's why it's such an important part of meditation, because as you breathe, you're alive. You know that you're alive with every breath you're taking, because you are breathing. Because when you're not, then you're going into to the point where you won't be a living human anymore at that point, if you lose breath long enough. So getting back to the idea of what we're talking about, the society's general society, I guess you could say, is a great lack of seeing things as transitions and transformations. You know, death and transformation pretty much can be interchangeable words. Think about it. You transform through the transformation of your mother from her human life to her to passing on to the next adventure, wherever that may be for her spirit, her soul. Perhaps reincarnate on this earth. Who knows? But that's the point. I mean, when we tear things down, something else is built in its place, you know. And destruction and creation are two sides of the same coin, because you can't have one without the other. And you can't have life without death.
Yep. And on that note, let's go to the break. And we'll be right back after a song and the Pagan Radio ad and our rejoin. And the song is Dove, Babe the Bard, How and Toe. See you in a few minutes, everyone.
Take no scorn to wear the horn. Was the crest when you were born? Your father wore it, and your father wore it too. Hallelujah, jolly rumble, we were up.
International Pagan Radio. You can hear your favorite artists such as Dave the Bard, Tuatha Dea, Spiral Rhythm, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and many, many more. Join us for exciting shows like Ask a Witch and Storytime with Rook as well. www.internationalpaganradio.com on the net or on TuneIn Radio on your mobile devices. Join us on Facebook and Twitter too. International Pagan Radio, all pagan, all the time.
Welcome back to an emerging forest on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We hope everyone was able to stretch their legs and get a drink. And now, back to Alan.
Well, welcome back, everyone. And here we are on the other side of the break.
Yeah, here we are.
So, here we are.
So what? So what did you want to add? Where did you want? What did you want to say after?
Basically, I took you said you took care of someone who was in the end stages of human life.
Yeah.
And I did as well, and I held. I didn't. I guess I had what was in my head as the normal human attitudes or the normal taught attitudes, which was panic, disbelief, unhappiness, not being able to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a few caregivers who would come in, and that was helpful. But it was only afterwards that I began to really think about And only after I transitioned in, you know, after 18 months of personal vindictiveness and actually thinking about what that transition time is, the time when someone gives up their life, and they're actually everyone's a conscious being, so they're actually consciously saying, this is a stage of life that I need to experience.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they wouldn't experience it. I mean, there are many ways to die, and you can die very suddenly, and you don't go through that end phase of life, or you can go through that end phase of life.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a choice, and it's literally, since I now am of the opinion that all experience is definitely chosen, because the soul, you know, wouldn't waste their time doing an experience that's not of use to it. I really see all times and all experiences for all beings being utmost in value. Maybe we don't understand why they're of value, and we certainly don't, because we don't understand ourselves. We're like, well, why am I here having this experience? I don't understand it. But you're still having it, and you're having it tomorrow, and you're having it for 10 years, or you're having it for your whole life, and you don't understand it. And that's why people are saying, well, God is very cruel, or God can be cruel, or God is a God that we can't understand, because why am I having this experience? But it's actually an understanding of, in my mind, in my coping mechanism, in my silly understanding of why humans live as they do, you're building a character. You're putting a small bit of a coping mechanism for some circumstances, or maybe many circumstances, probably many circumstances, and you're out on the dance floor of building this coping mechanism, and then you rush over and you're over on the dance floor of building that coping mechanism, and there just are so many coping mechanisms to build. That's why we have just so many things going on in our lives, or maybe you only have one thing going on in your life. And that's the way it's supposed to be, and you're very focused, and you're only doing one thing. So, regardless of where...
This time of the year... Go ahead, finish your thought.
Go ahead.
No, I want to hear what you had to say.
This time of year, go ahead. I didn't have anything to say.
Well, this time of year, yeah, it's winter, and it's the time that things are in the state of stillness, you know, death. The spring is coming, and that's when things, you know, are rebirth, born. And if we look at nature, because nature, we live in it. I mean, it's our environment, it's our nest, it's our womb, you know. It has a pattern where you have the season in the spring when things, you know, come reborn and things get planted, you have summer and fall. So, and each season is associated with a different, you know, different aspect of the life cycle in many ways, the life cycle of what you plant. Because obviously you eat what you grow in the ground, and in those more ancient times, you really relied on that pattern, and that, you know, a good crop or bad crop is going to decide the fate of maybe your village. You know, that's how closely linked life and death was to nature at that time. And then you have, you know, the moon. The moon goes through its own cycles of life and death. Every month, the moon is reborn. and the sun. The sun has its cycle of setting and rising. It's always going to be in the east and west. But obviously different location, and that's going to provide warmth or coldness, which defines your seasons as well. And so it's linked together. And if you look at how nature is, you know, and also the fact that a lot of animals hibernate this time of year. Bears hibernate, and there's less wildlife out there. It's this time of stillness, a time of more contemplation. And it should be, because in those times, you didn't have electricity. So you had a lot of more hours of dark than light. So you slept a lot, or you procreated. You did something, but you weren't out, you know, on the streets. You know, there was no electricity, there was no light. You had a torch or something. But, and I think that's a point that, that could go back into, you know, before, as we reach later stages of our life, or someone's seriously ill or what have you, they're in a state of contemplation. They're looking back on their life. They're wondering what's going to happen next, because it's not what has ever happened before for them that they can remember. And it's a state of just finding stillness and centeredness. And then you're going to be rebirthed into whatever happens after you die. Or if it's a part of your time of your life, and you know that your job is ending, or the relationship is dead, or is dying, or you're, you know, maybe you're leaving a place you've lived for many years, like you had a house for many years. I rented my house out recently. And these are things that when we think of death, we have to put those into the conversation, because there is much of the concept of death as the actual death of the physical body, because we are affected by it. And it is a death. It's the end of something. It's the end of that period of your life when you graduate from high school. It's the death of the teenager when you turn 21 or whatever. It's the end, and then you're reborn into whatever you become. So to take the macrocosmic view and make it more microcosmic is how we as humans look at and have relationship with death on the many levels that death exists, or, you know, happens. And understanding a fuller idea, you know, of what that means, because we hold on to things. We hold on to relationships. We hold on to patterns of ourselves. We hold on to a job we don't really want to stay, because we're afraid of dying. You see what I mean? Because it is a death. It's a death of that who you were at that place, you know, especially if you're in a place for a long time, you're in a relationship for a long time. And that's why a lot of people stay at jobs they don't like, or they stay in a relationship they don't want, because they're afraid of death.
It's interesting that it's basically a fear of the unknown.
Right.
And
yeah, no, that's
even
true.
even if
you hit it right there.
Even if so, you're in a place, you understand the parameters, and even though you might have to cope by quote unquote going to the bar and drinking yourself senseless.
I've done that.
And commiserating with other people, at least you have the security of knowing what you'll be doing 6 months from now, which is
right.
The same thing. And getting back to the example from the top of the show with the Philadelphia Eagles fan.
Mm-hmm.
And the Philadelphia Eagles fan does not have the blanket anymore of how he or she is supposed to behave, because
mm-hmm.
it's actually interesting that that Eagles fan might not want to acknowledge that they just won the Super Bowl, because the old ways of behavior allowed them to form friendships, form ways of coping after big losses,
create
and people that they met, right, tell lore of X number of years ago when this really rotten thing happened to the team.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this whole lore. I mean, you might think of it as the book of let's just call it the book of death. And they could have a lore about the book of death, and they would meet and drink, and there would be this entire social culture that would grow up around the how bad the Eagles would make them feel at the end of the year. And I know for myself, I don't know about you, but a close friend of mine when I was younger, and I would just stay in contact with each other and literally be on the phone, and we would actually be rooting against the Eagles because, you know, maybe that year we hated the coach, or we wanted to have them fulfill basically going 0 for the rest of the season. So a particular coach who happened to be Richie Kotite,
Rich Kotite. I figured that's who you were talking about.
and we were actually, like, I would watch the first half of the game. I believe those years I was working in Princeton. I would come home on the weekend to suburbs outside of Philadelphia, and I would literally talk to my friend during the first half on the phone at my mom's house, hop in the car, and hope I would get up there to Princeton to return to my apartment up there by the time the second half started, and just, like, be in ecstasy when they lost, because then, you know, the coach was going to get fired. But it's that level of involvement, even if it's with perverse, I like the team. I wanted the team to do well. I wanted the team to do so well so badly that I wanted this goofball to be gone. So I'm sure, you know, everybody's tuning in and saying, you know, why is this a sports radio show all of a sudden? So, but another idea that you also introduced was, my perspective now is, professional athletics is literally a scripted drama, and it's a product, and there are some really hallmark things that they want you. It's like a meal that you would have at Fridays, or it's like a movie that you would go to. They want you to receive a certain level of excitement at the product when you go. So it's really no longer given to chance that you're not going to see some really exciting plays. And it's like, okay, the World Series, how come they're all going 7 games? And why are there so many overtime games? And why was why are most of the big games at the end of the year really close? Well, it's because there's commercials on, and they don't want you to leave your seat until the game's over, and they want their commercial advertisers to still have your eyeballs on the TV. And they want you also to be extremely satisfied. It's like buying a refrigerator. The refrigerator manufacturer wants you to have a good experience. They really do. So the sports franchise is a professional. It's like the Harlem Globetrotters. Everyone knows that those are scripted, but they're not willing to take the leap and say the things that, I mean, people pay large sums of money to go to these entertainment things. I mean, really large sums of money. People dedicate
their they're so high priced. It's ridiculous.
People dedicate, like, they say, okay, we don't do that thing over there. We don't do that thing over there. But we follow and are extremely loyal and have season tickets to this professional sporting franchise. And they literally identify themselves as bleeding green.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they do. And as you said at the outset, I listened to and wanted to know what was going on with the Philadelphia Eagles, because many years ago I was interested in them, but I also want to know what's going on with them because I want to actually be able to hold a conversation with someone or to know whether they got royally screwed in the Super Bowl, and I should keep my head down. Basically, if they got royally screwed in the Super Bowl, it would be keep your head down for like 5 years. That's why I was telling people who were on the radio. Actually, it happened after we were off the radio. It was the week Dave Miller was on. Was the Super Bowl. But I want to know because I live right across. I live in Eagleville. So I want to know because if people are going to be extremely upset, I mean, that could have caused people to get extremely upset in this area. And I wanted to know because I don't want to be stupid, right? I mean, you don't go outside and basically make some wisecrack about the football team and then get, you know, destroyed by somebody. Because
right.
It was an unwise thing to do. I mean, you want to have your eyeballs open and after the game, because literally I got on earlier in the season. I got on the Patco line to go into Philly to catch a 2 a.m. bus at the Greyhound station to go to New York City to act. And I got onto the train a few minutes after, like at 1:15, I was getting onto the westbound train. Well, the eastbound train that came in just a few minutes earlier was absolutely packed, completely full of Eagles fans who had just come from the game. I think it was a Monday night game. And you're just like, oh my gosh, they're getting done with their entertainment, and I'm going to work someplace at 6 a.m. I'm going to work in New York City,
right.
Someplace on the, I can't remember which show I was going to, whether it was on the Upper West Side or Upper East Side of Central Park. I don't remember what show it was where I was going to, but I had a 6 or 7 a.m. call time.
Wow.
So
yeah,
it's really interesting. I love all people. I'm willing to let all people do what they're doing of seeing. And this has been a change for me because I at first I was like non-accepting of other people and saying, hey, why are they eating that way? Or why are they conducting themselves that way? Or why do they continue to smoke? But now I understand that everybody's just doing what they need to do. But if what they're doing, so we're in a limited space here. I mean, we don't have infinite space. And if somebody has an industry that's doing, that's pointing the vector of the ship in one direction, and I can't have my dream, because of the way the ship is going, I have to make a decision, and I either have to say, I give up my dream, or I have to look really hard at the situation and say, what part of me has to die to birth what I need in order to change the direction of the ship?
Yeah.
And that's a really hard question. Because the ship is going to, say you believe, like I believe, that the fertility of the planet, of the place we live, whether you call it a planet or a flat plane, whatever you call it, let's say I believe that the fertility of the ecosystem is decreasing, and none of the, like the video that I just watched before we came on the air was basically along those lines of very much a huge decrease in the fertility content, which means there's much less fertility that I can consume in food. Well, what's food? Food is things that I eat, and it's also experiences that I can have, teachers that I can meet, skills that I can begin to learn. Now, we're not in the wrong place. We're not in a place where we're not supposed to be. So I can't say, oh my gosh, why am I here, and crawl under a rock and just cry. I understand that I'm here because I'm supposed to be here, but I can either say, well, I'm going to go along with the ship just because it's going in that direction, or I can say, as I just sort of preface that little aside with, if I really want to be honest with myself, when I kind of do, what do I need to do? And I don't have the answers to these questions, and my life will be trying to answer those questions and trying to do the best I can. But life is not about palatable choices. And
no, that's true.
Whoever I am, and whatever soul that I am the forward manifestation for, I sort of have left behind many layers. I've had many personal deaths. I have many deaths of how I was conducting myself. And I know very well that friends of mine who have been friends of mine 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago are still doing the same thing that they were doing 40 years ago. And that there's a reason why I don't have that many friends, and there's a reason why I jump from circles of friends to other circles of friends, and it's sort of to not be tied down as being one person, because I'm not one person.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's the thing. To get back to what you said about you don't judge people for their smoking or, you know, whatever they're doing. They're just living their life the way, you know, there. Well, if we look at it from a macrocosmic way, the real things happening right now is just the Earth doing the same thing. I mean, I feel at times that humanity overestimates their... And Earth is large. It's been around for far longer than humanity. And I feel in some ways that humanity looks at them, at their role, a little bit bigger than it should be. Like maybe we're not really the reason all these things are happening. I mean, to a degree, sure. But to have this idea that, oh, well, we're the cause of all of these things, you know, the Earth has its own cycle, its own time of rebirth, death, life, like anything else. And climate change is real. The climate, Earth evolves. Things change. You know, where once was a desert is now a flourishing wetland or forest, where there once was an ocean is now land. I mean, it's all every moment. the Earth. I mean, the whole way that the crust moves back and forth, the plates, which creates the way that we can have even, you know, habitable plane, but also can cause earthquakes as well. So this idea that you know, that we are such a we have that much power that we can influence this incredibly large sphere is sometimes somewhat I feel it's somewhat ingenious. It's not
disingenuous.
Disingenuous, exactly. Yes, that's what I was thinking about this. Thank you. It's not the means that we should, like, stop, you know, taking care of things, but I believe that, you know, everything has a cycle, and in certain animals and certain species, they die off, and then another species replaces those. I mean, it's just how it's always been. In law, you know, that's how, you know, it's not our role to play police, you know, we can stop this. Well, that's presumptuous, isn't it? I mean, it's well-intentioned, but it's presumptuous. As presumptuous, I also believe that we think we have such an influence over the Earth. You know, I mean, an impact to a degree, certainly, but a lot of things happening are still, you know, it doesn't mean that you go drill in the rainforest. I'm completely against that. But my point is, but on a different level, because you just don't, you know, crap in your own nest, you know, or live in it. So I think that's something that is another period of life and death and birth. And there's certain things that will die off on the earth that it will never be seen again. The things already have. I mean, you know, go back to woolly mammoths, to dinosaurs, to dodo birds, to passenger pigeons, whatever. And then other species will replace those. And I don't know if it's necessarily humanity's role to interfere with that cycle. So that's, and that goes back to the fear of death again. Fear of the extinction of things. When you know, everything has a beginning, middle, and end. And also a period of you know, birth, death, and things like that. So what we see as catastrophic is from a somewhat myopic point of view sometimes. It certainly is catastrophic to humans, but it's not necessarily catastrophic to the Earth itself.
Yeah, it's interesting. I really can't get into it. It would take too long, and would be outside the context of this program for me to respond or to explain how I look at things. But there's a video on the internet. Yeah, there's a video on the internet about it's called "There Are No Forests on Planet Earth." On "There Are No Forests on Flat Earth, Wake Up." And the guy is, I believe, he's Russian, and it's a video, the content of which I'd seen previously, but he puts a lot more interesting context on it. And my attitudes on everything evolve and change drastically, literally week to week. So I try not to make emotional decisions or speak about things. I try to honor other people's viewpoints, and I try not to, because even the latest thing that I've learned hasn't had time to sink in, and I'm so immature with it that why should I bring it forward because I haven't had time to chew on it. And 6 months from now, it might not even be a part of what I think about, because one thing exploring one idea one day leads to something else the next. And my goodness, I mean, usually they're contradictory. And then you're like, well, how do that? Then you sort them out, and you take the deeper, the things that make things simpler. You take the contributions from both sides, and what you're left with is you're left with thanking the teacher, but not really believing what they taught for the most part, and moving on. So,
well, I was touching on the contradiction.
Go ahead.
No, what I was saying was I was touching on contradiction. I think that's what my basis of what I was really getting at was this contradiction between what we perceive and what could actually, you know, the contradiction between what we perceive and what other possibilities could be, and then how to look at that. You know, how to look
right
at that,
I mean the
variable.
There's literally a fear story. About, from my perspective is, I read the document. I can't remember what they're called, International Climate Change Panel, ICP or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And their summary is, written in such wishy-washy language. They won't come right out and say A caused B. They actually use in their summary that's like the big flag that they're waving around. They say this conduct by humans may have caused this,
mm-hmm.
but that's not what they sell. They sell be afraid of your conduct because it absolutely is causing this.
Right.
If you look at, let's say the sun is the major reason why things get warm and cools around here, and it basically is the contributor to why there are living things and at night why it gets cold or colder.
Mm-hmm.
If you look back in history, there was a time in England. And I can't remember exactly what year it was, but it was really, really warm. And it was really warm for a reasonable period of years, and they actually changed what they grow in England, and they grew grapes in England, where you can't grow grapes nowadays. But it was,
right.
I don't know, 5 degrees warmer or 10 degrees warmer. But no one wants to go back and actually do their homework and encounter the fact that the adrenaline fear story that they're being told is, you know, possibly or probably not correct. So that's
mm-hmm.
why so many of the other things that are being sold, I mean, the sports team is sold as being an adrenaline rush.
Right.
That's why they go to the last minute, the last play, and that's what they try to tailor. The television show gets wrapped up in the last 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The thriller novel goes to the author takes you to the edge of your seat. Well, that's your choice to open up to basically take the IV out of that book and stick it into your arm, your mind, and take the ride. So what we have just in a very, very general is a society that's a bunch of adrenaline junkies.
They're
you know,
for the love of
and,
caffeine.
And it's basically every single morning they can't even get out of they can't even get to work without a heavy, you know, 2 or 3 cups of adrenaline junkie stuff. And you can't, I mean, you can be meditating and doing that. I mean, you look at the quote-unquote healthiest people on the face of the earth, the marathon runners, and you watch, like, the Olympic, the U.S. team of Olympic so-and-so super athletes training, and they're having a religious experience every morning about their cup of coffee.
Right.
So to ask somebody like that to change the model of their life. Now, it's just not a model of their life. It's the underpinnings of their life is I want a society that's going to excite me and keep me entertained where I don't have to actually look in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And from my perspective, that's the society that we live in, where you can go to work, come home, watch TV shows until you need to go to bed, or watch TV shows until a ridiculous hour in the morning and not get that much sleep, or however you want to put it. There's a lot of people living a life. And I'm not saying they're not doing the work that they're supposed to be doing. They are absolutely doing the foundational work for their soul that they're supposed to be doing, but they're not changing. And life is long. From my perspective, life is in my core beliefs, there isn't time. Time doesn't exist because life is so long and there's so much to learn. So these people are learning something. They're statically doing the same thing over and over again, but they're building cognitive pathways of behavior. And that's fine. I'm not the same. I don't do that. Or I probably did it back in the day for me. But I move on. I explore things. I take massive amounts of foundational underpinnings about how I actually think about life, and I remove them. And it used to be very painful for me to do that, but it's becoming much easier for me to actually be more psychologically flexible. And so that's sort of what I do when I find a different idea. I like to bring it in and take it apart and understand who I am in relation to that and understand how that sheds light on my situation.
Yeah, well, in my case, I see it as part of, in my own personal case, I see it as part of the maturing process, the maturation process. It would be easy for me to remain static to, for example, and this is how some people are. I mean, their entire weekend is in the fall, revolves around football. You got college football on Saturday. You have like 3 or 4 games on Sunday. You have pro football on Monday. You have Monday Night Football, and it'd be easy to live that type of life and, you know, hang out with the guys, go to the bar, watch the game Saturday, drink, watch the game Sunday, drink, and then, you know, Monday go to work, come home, watch the Monday night game, you know, drink some more, go to, you know, it becomes its own, well, it becomes a ritual, of course, but it also becomes habit, and it becomes comfortable, and it becomes like, you know, becomes second nature.
So there's that's interesting because there you can become a person who courts comfort, and you can look at that as you can become someone who courts security being security that you know you're going to maintain that comfort, or you can be someone who's looking to find out who you are, because both people are finding out who they are. The people who are in the same place really don't need to move, because when the soul is done with that experience and doesn't want you to have it anymore, it's sucked that piece of fruit dry, you're not going to stay there any longer. And it's really interesting that I just don't stay certain places for very long. And it's probably the case that I haven't found the piece of fruit that I actually want to deal with yet. So I'm still, that's what a seeker is called. They're still seeking out the sugary fruit in their life, and they haven't found it yet.
I'm looking for something dark and delicious.
Oh, okay.
Doesn't need to be
sweet. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, in context of what we need to maintain ourselves physiologically. So, is that good for you? Are you happy with where we are? Hi, folks. This is kind of how we end the program, because it's not scripted.
How we land the plane.
And we sort of got on the ride tonight, basically saying, hey, we want to cover sort of this area of conversation. So here we are at the end of our unscripted program, and David's like, yeah, two thumbs up. I think we're done. So, David, do you want to give your contact information?
It's completely scripted, Alan. I had everything written out. So, the contact information. I'm on Facebook under my name, so that's one way to reach me. Email address, dwhitman0906@gmail.com.
And folks, that's WHITMAN.
Like the bridge.
So, hi everybody. I'm Alan Ritter, the host of An Emerging Forest. I run a small produce club in the southern New Jersey and southeast Pennsylvania area. Actually had a gentleman come down all the way from Chalfont last week, both to the market in South Philadelphia, where we walked in and we were so glad that he was there with his SUV, because there was literally a massive amount of unbelievably priced organic produce. We found cases of 16 cauliflowers, and every time I accept fruit, it's because it's in good condition. So when I go to look at cauliflower, I look and make sure it's clear. I make sure the leaves on the back are not moldy. So clear, but usually when cauliflower is getting a little bit of age on it, it's got some gray or black spots, mold on the front of it. This was clear, very nice cauliflower, and they were selling. The cases either are 12-count per case or 16-count per case. The 12s are just larger veggies. And they were selling an entire pallet of those, which is basically 2x2 at the base and up like 25. So it's about 100 cases. They had 100 cases of cauliflower there. And if you wanted to buy one, it was $3. So I bought six. And so I had 96 cauliflowers in my refrigerator at this time. I bought those on Thursday morning. There are three cauliflowers left. I've eaten two. The rest I gave out. I sold. I sold those for 75 cents a piece. And for the price that we got 16, you can't get one at Whole Foods. We also got a great variety of other items, and we stuffed an SUV and a sedan, and we were not able to spend $100 on Thursday morning. And then we went back on Friday for other things. The gentleman came down again, and we got some first, which is the highest quality items. Of course, you spend a lot more, but the quality is there, and you want to invest in you want to invest your money there in the fragile stuff. You want to invest your money in the first market for berries, you want to invest your money in the first market, or greens, because the berries just go bad. Greens lose their nutritional value rather quickly. And I would recommend that if anybody wants to grow greens, the best place to grow greens are in your house, to sprout them however you can do that, because and to have the most fertile soil that you possibly can to do that in, because greens are the things that deliver minerals to your body, and they degrade. So if they're coming from California, they're really not the best choice to make. So if I had my ways with my, if I had my druthers with the produce club, we would have a facility here local to us that was growing, greens 12 months of the year. That's a dream for me, but hopefully I can realize it. And, my personal email is RITTER.ALAN88@gmail.com. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Have a wonderful week, and engage your passion and get uncomfortable and transition and have your old self die if you're interested in doing that. Otherwise, continue to build your soul. Have a great week, everyone.
For listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.